I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Katrina Parks. She's director and producer of the new documentary, The Harvey Girls, Opportunity Bound. It will be screening this Sunday, the 17th of November at 4 o'clock at the New Mexico History Museum. It's a benefit that also includes reception afterwards at La Fonda. And it will also be on public television, KNME TV, on Thursday, the 21st of November at 7 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So who was Fred Harvey and how did he get into the restaurant business?
Well, Fred Harvey really, he was one of the first American entrepreneurs. He arrived in the U.S. at age 17 in 1853, and he kind of started working his way up in kitchens. He worked first as a dishwasher, and then by the 1860s, he had opened up his own restaurant in St. Louis with a business partner. But unfortunately, on the eve of the Civil War, the business partner joined the Confederates and ran away with their funds. And so he, you know, was a young man starting out. Things had looked like they were really going well for him, but then he had this huge business obstacle, and so he started working for the railroads. And he worked in many capacities for them and had plenty of rail travel experience, which in those days wasn't very comfortable, and he had plenty of opportunities to experience your typical railroad fare, which, you know, was the food served basically trackside. You know, it was typical practice, you know, to just scrape the leftovers from someone's plate and reserve them, reserve coffee. And so he had the idea to start offering better food to passengers. And starting in the 1870s, he formed a unique partnership with the Atchison-Topeka-Santa Fe Railroad and started opening up restaurants along the railroad lines. And, you know, the partnership was unique in that the railroad really provided all of the infrastructure. They built the buildings and they transported food to these different locations. He really just provided the, you know, the cooks and the people to serve the food. And he really became known for bringing fine dining to small railroad towns.
Was the food really good?
It was really good. I mean, exceptionally good for the day. He was known to serve, you know, these huge pieces of pie. It would be like a quarter of a pie. And he was renowned for his coffee. And also for all of the, he really prided himself on freshness. And so, you know, they would bring exotic meats from all over. They also really kind of pioneered, I would say, the local movement and made use of what was out west already. And, yeah, he got, you know, wildly successful reviews, and he was really the only option also for passengers at the time.
So how did the Harvey Girl phenomenon happen? I mean, this workforce has behind it a rather sad story of racism.
Yes. So as the company expanded, as they went further and further west, in those days, there were actually a few women working as waitresses in the Midwest, but it wasn't commonplace. It was kind of the exception, and they certainly weren't known as Harvey Girls. So as they went further and further west, towns became more wild, and basically, in 1883, Fred Harvey, accompanied by an old friend of his, arrived in Raton, New Mexico, and they discovered that the restaurant was, you know, a shambles, and Fred Harvey was very, very displeased by what he saw. And as legend has it, his friend turned to him, Tom Gable, and said, you know, why don't you bring in women? They'll really, you know, help civilize things, and they're much more reliable than men. Stephen Freed, who wrote this wonderful book on Fred Harvey called Appetite for America, when he did further research, he discovered that, yes, at the time, most of the waiters in these small Western towns were African-American. And the cowboys many of them were former Confederate soldiers from the Civil War. So there was a lot of hostility between the two groups, and the waiters, you know, were really worried for their lives and would, you know, bring guns to work. And so there actually was a story about a fight that took place at the Raton Harvey House in 1883 in, I think, Stephen uncovered in the Las Vegas Optic. So, yes, when after the company instituted women across the board, they weren't hiring African-Americans as waiters in the actual Harvey houses themselves. But there were, you know, it was the Harvey girls didn't serve passengers on the train. So once that became, you know, a common practice of serving meals on the trains, you had African-Americans employed there.
It's funny because I read that in Stephen Fried's book. We had him on the air when that book came out, and I couldn't help but think that the people who had been former Confederate soldiers who became cowboys and moved to New Mexico and Arizona, you see that phenomenon where they couldn't bear the idea of ex-slaves serving them food and having that be a job that they were being paid for and so on. Whether their, you know, great-great-grandchildren weren't some of the people behind some of the current hostility toward immigrants in those same places.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think, I mean, kind of the wonderful thing about, you know, Fred Harvey and the story of the Harvey girls is that it is all about immigration and providing economic opportunity for people. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's one really positive thing about the company. I mean, certainly, yes, African-American male waiters were displaced in the process, but it really was, ironically, it opened up the way for what became, you know, one of the first large-scale all-female workforces in the United States. And it opened up the doors of the American West to women. Up until that time, you know, there really weren't many ways that single women could move west and make a living.
So who were these women? What were their lives like? They were quite young. How did they get recruited to come work for Fred Harvey's company?
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, the company had a woman in a kind of top human resources position. Her name was Alice Steele. She was based in Kansas City, and she, you know, originally the idea the company had was we're going to recruit women, young women from the East and Midwest. And send them out west. So they all, for the most part, really went through her office. And some of the Harvey girls I interviewed actually remembered meeting with her and said that it was a bit terrifying. And she was very strict about what she was looking for. She wasn't looking for women who had been waitresses previously because she believed that they had, you know, the worst training. And so she found that women who were, you know, in some cases coming straight off farms and had never, some of the women I interviewed had never been more than like 10 miles from home. But especially in times like the Great Depression, you know, whereas families, you know, originally probably thought, oh, we can, you know, take care of our girls and they'll just, you know, go off and leave home when they get married, they suddenly found like, no, we actually need extra income. And so you had young women just, you know, moving, you know, following this opportunity because they needed really to send money back home to their families.
So that was the main motivation for them to go so far away from home and work? I mean, one also gets the impression from your documentary that there was also just these women had a real spirit of adventure.
Yeah, I think it was both, you know, both economic opportunity and also wanting to do something different. And all of the women that I interviewed were very feisty and high-spirited and very fun to hang out with. I should mention that some of them will actually be at the event at the New Mexico History Museum. So it's really wonderful to get to share the film with them. I think, you know, there were a bunch of reasons why many women became Harvey girls, but certainly one thing that attracted me was that spirit of adventure that you mentioned.
I mean, this was a great opportunity for so many women who went to places like New Mexico to work. If not for that, what were their options as young women? I mean, you know, 18, 20-year-old women.
Well, especially, you know, there really weren't many opportunities for women in terms of working outside of the home. I think it was still, you know, up until the 40s in World War II. World War II really changed things, but then there was, you know, a big backlash and women were kind of sent back to the home. But up until that point, you know, women's role was to be very domestic, and it really was, you know, to be with their families and take care of kids. And so for the Harvey girls, this was really a unique chance to be able to move away from home, go somewhere new, go out west, make a living. In many cases, the women actually stayed with the company and were promoted within the company itself. You know, they would become the head waitress or kind of a manager or a house mother. And the other unique thing about the system was that you would get sent to one town and you would work as a waitress there. But then after your initial contract was up, if you wanted to renew your contract, and as you got more and more seniority, you had more and more of a kind of selection about where you would go next. And you could decide, oh, I want to go to the Grand Canyon. And you could be there for 6 months. And then, you know, when you were tired of that, you could say, oh, I'd like to go to Albuquerque and work at the Alvarado. So it was a very kind of unique opportunity to also be very mobile.
Did they tend to stay at the job very long, most of these Harvey girls?
The initial contract was, you know, 6 months to a year. And the women I interviewed, yes, they did. I mean, there was one woman I interviewed who did it for like one night. But for the most part, they stayed. You know, I interviewed some women, some of the Albuquerque Harvey girls I interviewed stayed with the company for more than two decades. So, you know, I think that shows how much they enjoyed working for the Harvey Company. And also, you know, some of them, the women that I interviewed who stayed the longest worked kind of in the 50s and 60s at the Albuquerque airport. And many of them were single mothers. So it gave them a free time that they could spend with their kids.
Now, we're talking to Katrina Parks about her documentary, The Harvey Girls, Opportunity Bound. Were these young women making good money?
Yes, definitely. I mean, for the time, you have to understand, I mean, at least initially, their room and board was covered and most of their food. So then they would make a wage. It might be something like $20 a month when you're looking at the 1930s. But then, you know, you would have tips in addition to that. So for the time, since all of their living kind of daily expenses were covered, they had uniforms. I mean, all of that was taken care of. It really was a good wage.
I think it's interesting that, I mean, one thing leads to another. So you have these women who are an all-female workforce, and they're making money, which leads them to a certain kind of freedom, which they never would have had otherwise, which really feeds into a sense of independence and feminism that probably wasn't what Fred Harvey had in mind, although maybe he wouldn't have been against it either. But it's part of a much bigger social movement that happened in the country through the 20th century.
Yeah, definitely. And at the end or in the latter part of the documentary, I interviewed Therese Conant, who is an Albuquerque resident, and she was the founder of New Mexico Now. And she did that, which now is the National Organization for Women, and she did that while working for Fred Harvey. So she had her days free because of waitressing nights, and she brought together women's groups from all over New Mexico and participated in rallies and, you know, was very much part of the feminist movement of the 1960s.
How long did this company go on? How long were there Harvey Girls? I mean, there are still some who are alive today.
The company was sold in the 1960s, but there were still Harvey Girls, or people who called themselves Harvey Girls, at the Grand Canyon into the 80s. You know, the traditions of the Fred Harvey Company really carried on, I would say, into the 80s. I spoke to someone, she's not actually in the film, but she considered herself a Harvey Girl, and she worked in the mid-80s at the Grand Canyon.
Now, back at the beginning, when this whole thing got started and they started being called Harvey Girls, they kind of got a reputation. What kind of a reputation did they have, and to what extent was it based in reality?
Well, they definitely, the company really, I would say, went to great lengths to protect the Harvey Girls' reputation, because when the company began, you know, this practice of hiring women and sending them out to Western towns, they really came up against the stigma that being a waitress was really like a one step above being a prostitute.
Right.
So they instituted, you know, this very prim and proper uniform. As some of the Harvey Girls told me, you know, we were dressed like we were nuns. Their skirts went all the way to the floor, and they had, you know, their arms were covered, and they wore these prim and proper white starched aprons. So initially, I suppose, but I think at the time, you know, there wasn't being prim and proper in a Western town was probably a great asset. I mean, they were really considered, like, these were wives, and many of them became, you know, the wives of cowboys and ranchers in the towns. And then as time went on, they sort of got this glamorous reputation because of, you know, in 1946, there was the Harvey Girls musical with Judy Garland.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it always, being a Harvey Girl always had a certain cachet and status. And as many of the Harvey Girls that I interviewed say, you know, they weren't waitresses. They were Harvey Girls. So they considered themselves, you know, and the company did a lot to set them apart.
Now, was it all white women?
No. I was starting, I would say, you know, with the wars, with World War I, and then much more so in World War II, the company really opened its doors to Hispanic and Native American women. And, yeah, it was a great, you know, great opportunity for them, as it had been for white women, too.
We're talking to Katrina Parks. Now, how did you find all the women in the film? Some of them are just amazing and very charming and spirited women to this day.
Well, you know, when I started, I first found out about the Harvey Girls at the Boleyn Harvey House Museum, which is in Boleyn, New Mexico. And these kind of, I would say, smaller railroad Harvey House museums exist in many places. And they are really the ones who are collecting and recording this history. And so they were able to put me in touch with a group of women who lived in the community. And so I interviewed them. And then later on, I did interviews. There was a San Diego Harvey Girl convention, and Harvey Girls came from around the country and, you know, a lot from California, and met there. So it was really through working with community groups that I was able to get in touch with Harvey Girls.
So they really have their own network.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I think being a Harvey Girl was a very significant and kind of defining moment for many of the women that I interviewed. And so they remained, you know, in touch with each other over the years, especially the Harvey Girls who worked at the Albuquerque airport. They, you know, had many reunions and would get together, I mean, at least once or twice a year.
I wonder if they have a Facebook page.
Well, I have a Facebook page for the Harvey Girls documentary, and we're still collecting stories. And I know, you know, the New Mexico History Museum will have a Fred Harvey exhibit, which will include actually some installation segments from the film that will open in November 2014. And so they're also collecting stories and anything that has to do with the Fred Harvey restaurants in New Mexico. So if anyone has something and wants to come forward, they can contact Meredith Davidson at the museum.
Excellent. Now, there's a lot of great documents and photographs and so on in your documentary. Is there a place, like in one of these Harvey houses, where these are being collected?
Well, the archival came from many sources. I mean, I was lucky in that a lot of the women I interviewed were able to give me photographs to use in the film. And then there are also some great libraries and archival resources like the Palace of the Governors and Northern Arizona University. You know, they've really been collecting images all along, so I was able to convince them to let me use some in the film as well.
Katrina Parks is director and producer of the new documentary, The Harvey Girls, Opportunity Bound, which will be screening in a special event and benefit at the New Mexico History Museum this Sunday, the 17th, at 4 o'clock. It'll be followed by a reception at La Fonda, and people need to get their tickets in advance so they can call the New Mexico History Museum. It will also be on KNME Public Television on Thursday, the 21st of November at 7 in the evening. And Katrina, there's also some New Mexico events besides those things. Is that correct?
Yes, the Boleyn Harvey House Museum is doing a screening of the film at the public library on, I believe it's November 18th, so Monday, November 18th. And then on November 19th, we'll be going with the film to the Gallup Public Library, and that event starts at 6 p.m.
Well, it's a wonderful documentary, and I want to thank you very much, Katrina Parks, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.